Hello, and welcome to Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the Deities and Demigods supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. And as I do, I'm talking about the gods, heroes, and mythological beings that I find in it, and how to use them, and religion and mythology more generally, in your fantasy role-playing games. In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through the Central American Mythos section of Deities and Demigods. And today, we're going to take a look at two deities, one from the mythology of the Maya people, and the other from the mythology of the Mexica or Aztec people. Our first deity for today is Itzamna, who is listed as the god of medicine. In fact, being god of medicine is one of Itzamna's many roles, or at least he was invoked as a patron of like doctors and healers, or for medical aid. He also had a number of other roles, and these are reflected both in what we know about him from Spanish sources, and also his entry in the Deities and Demigods book. Itzamna is interesting because he's one of the many Maya deities that we don't actually know all that much about, and the sources that we have for Itzamna represent the paradoxical nature of our knowledge of Maya culture, or at least of Maya religion. Probably the person who wrote the most about Itzamna was a guy called Diego de Landa Calderon, and Diego de Landa was the bishop of the Diocese of Yucatan in the 16th century, and he wrote a book called Relación de las Cosas de Yucatan, so the relation of the things of Yucatan, so the things about Yucatan, you know, some facts about Yucatan. And in it, he kind of goes through the Maya ritual year, and he identifies Itzamna as associated with three major festivals. In the second of these, he is indeed venerated as god of medicine, and in the first, he's involved in a ritual blessing or cleansing of books, so he's associated with the preservation of knowledge and as a patron of scribes, and this is represented in Deities and Demigods, where it says that clerics of Itzamna tend to be excellent scribes. In the third of these festivals, he is worshipped by the elderly. So we can see that Itzamna fulfilled a number of different roles, but a picture of him is beginning to emerge as a kind of benevolent, scholarly, learned, and holy figure. He seems to have been invoked in particular in contexts that involve kind of blessing and purification. No one seems to be quite sure what his name means. There have been a number of different etymologies proposed, but one of them may be to do with the idea of asperging things, that is, blessing them by sprinkling them with water. But it's ironic that Diego de Landa is one of our most important sources for Itzamna because he's also one of the people most responsible for our lack of knowledge about Maya religion. Diego de Landa was responsible for an inquisition that destroyed a large amount of Maya artwork and a number of Maya texts. And it was only a few dozen books that were burned by this inquisition, but when you consider the relatively small number of Maya texts that exist into the present day, this is still pretty significant. Landa had been told that some of the Maya within his diocese were kind of, you know, although technically Catholic, were continuing to practice their traditional religion, and he cracked down hard on it in a pretty brutal way, so involving, you know, people were tortured and things like that. So this is one of the kind of terrible paradoxes of studying the indigenous religions of the pre-conquest period, is that our sources, you know, limited and incomplete as they are, they're the best sources that we have, but they're often created by the same people who are responsible for ensuring that our sources are so limited and incomplete. That colonialism's a heck of a drug. Anyway, Itzamna is, as I said, a creator deity, an inventor of writing, a god of priesthood and rulership. He's associated with agriculture, he's associated with hunting. He's sometimes depicted in the form of a bird, but at other times in the form of an old man, and he may be related to, you know, the boundaries between various deities in Maya religion are often unclear, so he may be an elderly form of another deity. But all of this is actually more or less consistent, kind of an unusually more or less consistent, with how he is depicted in Deities and Demigods. So it seems that in your campaign, Itzamna plays that kind of benevolent deity role, maybe in a way that's a little more what you'd expect to find from a benevolent healing deity in a D&D campaign than someone like Quetzalcoatl, who, although he's on the side of humanity, is more of an abstract kind of heavenly creator deity. Deities and Demigods claims that Itzamna is the son of Tezcatlipoca, the sun god, but that, I don't think that necessarily makes sense. I don't know that there's a source for that in Maya culture. I think, you know, in Maya belief, as far as we know, which is pretty limited, Itzamna occupies a pretty high place in the pantheon, and of course Tezcatlipoca is an Aztec deity, although it may be that, you know, they're trying to create an identification between Itzamna and, you know, some other Aztec deity, or between Tezcatlipoca and a Maya one. In your campaign, it seems like Itzamna actually has a role that is pretty straightforward. He's the nice guy, the god of things like writing and art. He's a god who looks after the elderly and teaches medicine and just in general has a kind of benevolence toward humanity. He seems to be lacking many of the kind of more grisly and frightening aspects of other Mesoamerican deities, although of course, since our knowledge about him is so limited, it's hard to say for certain. And this is something that we've seen in a lot of these pantheons. Like, it's adaptable for D&D. You kind of take the deity that is closest to this sort of gentle healer deity, and that's a position that's pretty popular among D&D player character clerics, right? Because healing is such an important part of the cleric's game role, that a deity devoted to healing and caring for people is just something that you're going to want to have in your pantheon. Although, I'm not familiar enough with the rules of first edition, like in terms of practice, to see whether or not the restrictions that this book puts on clerics of Itzamna are too limiting for a player character cleric. It may be that clerics of Itzamna in your campaign are the ones who are back in the city and that your characters return to when things, you know, in between adventures to get healed up and maybe sent on your next mission or whatever. But Itzamna kind of fulfills the role in this pantheon that we saw from, for example, Guan Yin in the Chinese mythos. And in some pantheons, we've seen deities kind of shoehorned into D&D appropriate roles. I seem to recall thinking that about Ki in the Sumerian pantheon, for example, although, I mean, it was a long time ago. But I don't think that's the case here. I think Itzamna as, you know, a benevolent blessing character definitely kind of fits with what we know about the deity and his mythology. Now, next up after Itzamna, we have Mictlantecuhtli. You will have noticed that the deities who have Nahuatl names, as opposed to Maya names, we've seen a lot of, like, repeated elements so far. So we've had several deities, either entries in the Deities and Demigods book, or just that I've talked about on this podcast, whose names include the element Tlikwe, which means a skirt. So, like, Chalchutlikwe or Coatlikwe. And we have seen a few by now who have, as one of their names, although I don't know if there are any listed this way, that have that Tecutli aspect. And that's just because Tecutli simply means lord. So Mictlantecuhtli is the lord of Mictlan. And Mictlan is the underworld in Mexica mythology, the place where most souls, although not all, go when they die. And Mictlantecuhtli is presented in a pretty gruesome form, as befits his role as a death god, as a skeleton, but with kind of bulging eyeballs, or maybe they just look bulging because his face no longer has any flesh on it, or as a man wearing a skull mask. And the Deities and Demigods book says he appears in the form of a lich, which seems about right. A Mictlantecuhtli is kind of presented in opposition to the creator god, and he lives in a windowless house in the underworld with his wife, Mictecacuhuatl, which I'm almost certainly mispronouncing. Mictlantecuhtli is listed here as lawful evil, and there's a tendency to present the death gods as evil. Obviously, from sort of his cosmological perspective, he's not necessarily evil. This is kind of debatable. He fulfills an important cosmological function. He is the fella who runs the land of the dead. He's not a devil, per se. He doesn't necessarily want harmful things, but at times he has been an antagonist to Quetzalcoatl, which, within the Aztec pantheon, is probably enough to earn you that evil label. One of the things that I really like about the description of Mictlan, well, actually, there are several things that I really like about the description of Mictlan. Mictlan is a place that you have to go through all these sort of ordeals to get to, including a wind that blows knives at you, so that's pretty grim. And once you get there, it's not just dead people who were there, or at least it didn't used to be, because when the gods were thinking of creating humankind, they decided to use the bones of previous gods, which were at that time lying down in Mictlan. And Quetzalcoatl went down into the underworld to retrieve them, but when he was there, Mictlantecuhtli played a trick on him. And there's a long story, but the ultimate outcome of it is that some of the bones wind up getting broken. So the bones are smashed all into bits of, like, different sizes. And that's why people are all different sizes, because they were made out of these bones. But because of Mictlantecuhtli's trickery, the bones you know, weren't all the same. It's kind of a neat little story, and it's very characteristic of Mictlantecuhtli. He's not necessarily a direct antagonist. He doesn't fight Quetzalcoatl. He just kind of tries to, like, distract him and trick him and get him to do stuff that's big, tries to make him fall into a hole and things like that. So Mictlantecuhtli, you know, he's presented, as I said, in this grim skeletal form. Well, actually, I say grim. He looks quite cheerful with his bulging eyes, and of course, skulls are always smiling. So he looks like a pretty happy guy. And in Aztec art, it is not necessarily the case that skeletons are sort of signs of ill omen, right? That in European, you know, medieval and post-medieval art, we tend to see skeletons as this image of the kind of memento mori. This, they're supposed to remind you that you'll die, and therefore that you need to clean up your act. In Aztec art, and so, I mean, again, I don't really know that much about it, but from what I've read, the skeletal symbol was a little less meant to be alarming. Death was seen as existing in balance with life, like Mictlantecuhtli and his wife are set up as opposites to Ometecuhtli and Omequihuatl, the Omequihuatl? Omesihuatl? I'm not sure how to pronounce that. But they are, you know, the couple who are the givers of life. So the givers of life and the, you know, lords of death are set up as being in this cosmological opposition. And I don't think that that necessarily makes Mictlantecuhtli a baddie. On the other hand, he's often depicted as ready to rip the dead to bits as soon as they arrive in his presence. Like, he's shown with his arms out in this kind of Frankenstein monster pose. He's also sometimes shown with his mouth open, the idea there that he's going to swallow up the stars, you know, as they kind of fade out of the sky at night. You know, they go down into Mictlan during the day. But again, he's not some kind of rogue deity. He was given his job by Quetzalcoatl and Tezcatlipoca, and he's just fulfilling it. And this is important, right, that the underworld, the land of the dead, isn't necessarily... Well, it is a bad place. It's complicated. Well, let's talk a little bit about Mictlan. I feel like you can't really talk about Mictlantecuhtli unless you talk about Mictlan. As I said before, Mictlan has all these kind of hazards, and the idea is that there are 9 levels to it, which is a bit of a coincidence, and each of them has its own distinct danger. You have to pass through them in a journey that takes 4 years, but you are guided along the way by Xolotl, the psychopomp, who I think is another aspect of Quetzalcoatl, or he's Quetzalcoatl's brother, who may or may not be another aspect of Quetzalcoatl. Anyway, everyone goes to Mictlan except for people who have died heroic deaths, and those are divided into warriors who died during battle or warriors who were killed as sacrifices, and women who died during childbirth. And they go off into the west and the east, well, the east and the west, respectively, and they help guide the sun on its journey through the sky. And this is sort of like, you know, well done. This is an honor that's bestowed on them for their heroic deaths. Although they can also, the women who die in childbirth also return to the earth for several nights each year as malevolent demons, which is kind of, you know, they lurk around crossroads and ambush people, which is a little weird. And people who've drowned go on to a different place. They go on to Tlalocan, which, as the name might imply, is sacred to the rain god Tlaloc. Some people have suggested that the worship of the figure of Santa Muerte, who's associated with a form of which is maybe associated with sort of syncretic popular Catholicism in Mexico, may be drawing on some of the images of Mictlantecuhtli or Mictecacihuatl. It's certainly the case that there are a lot of, you know, images of or personifications of death in Mexican folk art. Beyond that, I am not, like, in a position to state. Mictlan is pretty good. It's not, unfortunately, at least the text that I have don't give the kind of detail about it that we get from something like the Popol Vuh. You know, like a lot of... It does have its exceptions, as we said, but in general, it's just kind of where people go when they die. And I don't think it's seen as being particularly desirable to go there and die. Like, becoming a heroic dead person is really the perfect outcome, although obviously that's not accessible to a lot of people. Mictlantecuhtli is a scary guy because death is scary. But he's not the devil, right? I mean, he's a baddie, but only in a kind of, you know, rivalry or some kind of cosmic antagonism. But there's no sense that Mictlantecuhtli is going out there on the earth trying to cause harm. He's just the god of the place that people go to when they die. And that is a role that is sort of, you know, god of the place that people go to when they die and bad guy are separate in a lot of pantheons. And we have a tendency, because the roles are the same in popular Christianity to assume that they're the same in other places. And you can see examples of this in, like, Disney's Hercules, for instance, where Hades is portrayed as essentially the devil, which is, I mean, again, he's not a good guy in Greek mythology per se, but he's not Satan. That pantheon just doesn't really have exactly that kind of a role. Or the way in which, like, Marvel Comics Thor turns Hela into this active baddie in a way that she sort of isn't in actual Norse mythology. She's obviously a frightening and macabre figure in that mythology because she's a death goddess. And she's definitely understood as a bad lot, but I can't think of instances of her, like, causing havoc, you know, in Midgard, asterisk, Earth. That's a Marvel Comics Thor joke in the mythology. So it's the same here, where Mictlan Tecuhtli is a spooky character, but I think you could definitely have adventuring clerics or paladins of Mictlan Tecuhtli as long as you kind of put them in that role of, you know, enforcing the cosmological rules of death. So in my campaign, for example, we had a death cleric in the party, and he actually shared a lot of overlapping interests with the cleric of the goddess of life because, for example, they both hate undead. You know, they hate people who violate the cosmological duality between life and death. And other than that, he went around being grim and scary and weird, but, like, conducting funerals and things like that, you know, as a priest of the death god, officiating death rites and kind of being weirdly reckless. Itzamna and Mictlan Tecuhtli is sort of... When I look at Itzamna in particular, the description of clerics of Itzamna sound very unlike player character clerics, right? They only do abjuration and necromancy. I mean, again, I don't really know, like, what the full first ed cleric spell list looks like off the top of my head, but it would seem that, you know, just the fact that they mentioned that rule, it would probably be limiting. And that makes it sound like they're sort of assuming that, you know, clerics in your party won't be clerics of Itzamna, which, again, you know, if these gods aren't appearing in the world in the form, I mean, maybe the assumptions that you're going to fight a bunch of clerics of Itzamna, which seems like a pretty mean-spirited thing to do. But it seems like these gods are appearing in the world not in the form of you as their worshippers, but maybe that you're engaged in some kind of direct cosmic struggle with them or something. I'm actually really interested. If you have run an older D&D game in which direct interaction with deities was a big part of it, I'd love to hear about it, because for me, I'm always trying to see, you know, how these deities participate in kind of this fantastic society, but I don't know, it feels like Itzamna just becomes sort of the name of the nice god whose nice temple you go to get healed up. I don't know. If you're putting together a sort of mishmash early D&D pantheon where you have gods from all different historical pantheons, I do feel like Mictlan Tecuhtli is a good bet to put in there, except that that means that you need to find a place for Mictlan in your cosmology, because without Mictlan, none of it really makes any sense. You know, his thing is he's the lord of the land of the dead. He governs where people go when they die. But if that's not where they go when they die, then I don't know what he does with himself. Anyway, the really important thing about Mictlan Tecuhtli is that he looks terrific. The image of that grinning skull with its bulging eyes is just so memorable and striking that it feels like a waste not to have at least one PC cleric devoted to him, you know? Alright, that's about all the time that we have for this episode of Patron Deities. We're making good progress through the Central American Mythos section, and we're going to be back in 2 weeks looking at two of the most important deities in the Mexica pantheon, Tezcatlipoca, the sun god, and Tlaloc, the rain god. I've actually been to a temple of Tlaloc a long time ago. And that'll be next time on Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. Thank you for listening. And thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon.